Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
101.5 UMFM, this is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Elves, and kicking things off for us tonight, that is Seattle artist Terror Cactus with Donde Estas Tu featuring Pajua off of the brand new record Forastero that came out on Chica Chica Records today. Lots of new music out. It is a busy time of year for music releases, for shows. There's lots of stuff happening. Next Saturday night is Nuit Blanche here in Winnipeg. And so coming up in just a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to Kurt Tittlemeyer from Nuit Blanche Winnipeg about some of what's going on. Later in the show, I talked to Rayanna, who is no stranger to Winnipeg music fans, but is programming a Nuit Blanche set of events happening at CCFM's campus. We will get to that. But before we do, Donovan Woods is coming to town with his new record, Things Were Never Good If They're Not Good Now. This record's up on the UMFM charts. He'll be playing the BERT on October 11th. It's a Folkfest show. And man, was putting an ad together for this album and just really loved the song Trompe Single / Another Life. Made a little clean edit of it because he dropped the S-bomb a few times. But I just want to play it. Switching gears here, definitely different than the Terror Cactus, but no less good in its own way. Circle your calendar October 11th at the BERT. Stick around. We're going to be talking Nuit Blanche.
Holy bitch, your sun's gonna rise. It's been 10 years since about this time. Oh, stretch for me. Hold your hand out and let me see your better side. I wanna love you like it's over, like you're turning to stone, like we figure it's going nowhere, or even better, we know. And I'll stay
Blanche just around the corner, here to talk about it. Kurt Tittlemeyer, Executive Director of Nuit Blanche Winnipeg. Welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
Happy to have you on. Thankful you're making time during what I'm sure is probably the home stretch and probably one of the busiest times of your year.
Yeah, it is. We have the events are pouring in still from our independent curators and all the artists that we've commissioned. They're kicking it in high gear in their studio. They're starting to go out in the streets and test their pieces at night. It's pretty exciting.
So you mentioned the independent curators and there's kind of a blend of like stuff you guys have kind of organized and then other stuff. Like how, How do you kind of oversee something like that where there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that format of us producing installations, working with producing partners such as the Winnipeg Arts Council, The Forks, Wagwamiak, True North, all these amazing partners. But then there's a whole army of independent curators, of independent artists, small organizations. So it's really the community of all of these people throwing in their time, their efforts, their resources to make Nuit Blanche happen. And I think that's why our programming is impactful, is because we have things that are planned out. They've been planned out since January, and we have impromptu things, and we have things that we don't even hear about until the last minute. They just join our festival. So it's pretty exciting.
So the stuff that's been planned out since January, like what is the initial phase of this in January? Like, is it like brainstorming, like talking to different artists? Like what gets the ball rolling?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, it actually starts, I would say, in November, believe it or not. So after Nuit Blanche, our national office will send out a survey to people that attended or organized events, and we'll get that data usually in, you know, late October, November. And that's what we review, and that's where we make our plans for next year. So that's something I do with our board. And then, you know, we have discussions like lessons learned, what went well. It's just like any organization. And in January, we form an artistic advisory committee. So it's composed usually of about 8 curators, people from all different genres of art, different backgrounds. It has Indigenous representation, BIPOC representation, gender diversity, all of these things. We really want a diverse body of work that we present. And they start throwing around names, you know, these 8 different curators. And we start strategizing. We take the feedback from last year. And what do we want to really do this year? What are the notes we want to hit on with our programming? And then we start talking to artists, I would say, usually around March, April. And that's when we start firming up with our producing partners. And the conversation just keeps on going really until June, when we contract all the artists.
So the what do we want to do this year question, is it what didn't we do that we still want to do? What could we do? Like, how do you frame that?
Yeah, I mean, so I can talk a little bit about this year. And every Nuit Blanche in Winnipeg, I feel, has the same brand, that it's free, accessible, contemporary arts events downtown. But every year it does change a bit. And that's part of what Nuit Blanche is. We don't do the same thing every year. So we take that feedback that we get from the surveys. That's really the genesis of what we change for the next year. So this year we wanted more interactive art pieces. That's something our curatorial committee wants, and something we got from the public, the people that attend. So we were all on the same page there, something I was excited about. So we have more pieces where people could walk up and they can, for example, we have this great piece with Ian August and Andrew Bart, where it's a giant eight ball. And you can walk up and ask this eight ball a question and it'll give you an answer. So it's interactive that way. It's an amazing piece, but we love the fact that people can interact. So I think people can expect more of that this year. And the other feedback we got was we want more spectacle pieces. Pieces that are truly unique, that really don't belong in a gallery so much by great visual artists. They belong in the streets. So we have lots of just interesting one-of-a-kind pieces. One I would mention is called Trails of Light. We have these stilt walkers that are wearing these white illuminated costumes, and their stilts are like very, very high. There's 3 of them. They'll be traveling through the exchange. They're just roaming around. So we wanted something that you would only find at Nuit Blanche as well.
That roaming that these artists are doing is something that a lot of the like audience members are encouraged to do, obviously, like moving around, the mobility and kind of like the not fixity of things is kind of central to Nuit Blanche. Is like that's been my understanding of it. Is that kind of central to your thoughts about it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone Nuit Blanche is a bit different, but I think part of the experience is seeing multiple things in a night. And we really champion pedestrian culture. We feel that the downtown just looks different when it's full of volunteers, when it's full of beautiful artworks, when it's full of 30,000 cultural enthusiasts. You get a special vibe that's just Nuit Blanche with that combination. So we definitely encourage people to see more than one thing. Don't just sit in one patio or something like that. Go out there, experience Winnipeg. It looks beautiful. See as much art as you can. We improve access to that feature by having free trolleys that run 6 p.m. to midnight. We're working with Bike Winnipeg. They'll be organizing commuter rides that go from the suburbs right down to the forks. And what we new added new this year, we have water buses. So those will be free as well, running from 6 p.m. to midnight. So we really hope to make the pedestrian culture completely accessible so people can take in as many artworks as they can.
I was going to ask you about those water buses because I'd heard about that from someone who's a captain on one of those boats. Well, how did that come about?
Really part of our mandate is really to make contemporary arts for Nuit Blanche accessible to people. So the more that we can encourage easy transportation, that they don't have to park, not everyone has a car. We offer this programming in four different zones. So if you went from the WAG all the way to CCFM in St. Boniface, that's not really walkable for most people. So we feel we have to offer a free option to make it accessible. So we did the trolleys for years. It's probably been 7 or 8 years at least, the trolleys. And this year, that program, the trolleys, has been really successful. So we added in the water buses. It's just another way to move people.
And looking at kind of alternatives to cars in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And letting people know that when we all go downtown and celebrate it, it feels great. It looks great. It's safe. It's a great evening.
You mentioned CCFM. I'm going to be talking to Rayanna about HyperArt. Is that one of the ones that was initiated through Nuit Blanche Winnipeg, or was that something they brought to you?
There's kind of like two parts to that. Firstly, HyperArt is all curated and run by Rihanna. I'll let her speak to that. So HyperArt is about 10 or 12 events that happen at CCFM. They're spectacular events. I highly recommend going. Very unique programming. Some of the leading edge contemporary artists in kind of indie pop and visual art in Winnipeg will exhibit there. But further to that, we had an open call with the City of Winnipeg. So the City of Winnipeg gave Nuit Blanche a grant for our 150th anniversary as a city. And we put out a call to artists. It was made public to everyone to apply to receive this grant. And the winner would put on an installation that celebrates Winnipeg and our 150th anniversary. We're very grateful that she applied and she was selected by the committee. And so we are funding that one via the City of Winnipeg. And that will be featured in Steve Ajuba Park. So I'll let her talk a little bit more about those details. But I would say that's a spectacular installation that's going to be in the shape of Winnipeg. It's a maze, it has projections and mirrors, and it actually has three parts. You're supposed to go to the one at Steve Ajuba Park right across from CMHR, then walk to Les Maisons des Artistes on Provence, and then walk to CCFM and Cirque Meyer at 340 Provence. So it's got three parts to it.
Excellent. Well, we'll get into that with Rihanna. What does your night look like, Kurt, on Nuit Blanche?
It's hopefully I'm calm and collected and enjoying everything. I think that's the way it's going to be, but I am the point of contact. So I'm very much holding my walkie-talkie and dealing with their staff. But I would say that we do a tour with some of our volunteers, our board, and some other elected officials and so forth. So I do get to do a tour with all of them. So it's really rewarding because I kind of live with these pieces for like 6 months at least, and when you get to walk and actually see them come to life, it's really special.
Well, I hope the walkie-talkie channel is quiet that night and that you get to experience some of what you've been putting together all these months. Kurt, thanks very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule and really looking forward to Nuit Blanche.
Okay, well, thanks for the shout out.
cleaning services to present its worthiness to the rhythm of the mighty algorithm. Verse, chorus, verse. Music is the curse. The art has lost its worth. Music lost its worth. Wasted youth. Saved by the rock and roll. What's the use? Nobody listens to the radio. Nobody listens to the radio.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. Right before the break, Ottawa band Hot Mud with Nobody Listens to the Radio off of Pink Cloud Pop. That just came out on Mothland. I beg to differ, but whatever. Closet Judas before that, local act with the first track off of a forthcoming release that was Leaving Presently 2. And before that, my interview with Kurt Tittlemeyer of Nuit Blanche Winnipeg. As mentioned earlier in the show, I'm going to be talking to Rihanna about Hyper Art happening at CCFM as part of Nuit Blanche. We will get into that in just a minute. But before we do, Rowena Wise released a record earlier this year called Senseless Acts of Beauty, originally released just in Australia, but now out in North America. Really taken with this record. I heard comparisons to Aldous Harding, and I love Aldous Harding, so I had to check this record out. I'm going to play you my favorite track, Nobody's Savior, and then we will get into my conversation with Rihanna.
You're talking to him from below, trying to reach that little part of him, you know. Oh, to say you end up
All right. Well, as teased during our conversation with Kurt Tittlemeyer, I am speaking now to Rayana. Her contribution to Nuit Blanche Hyper Art happening at CCFM, and she's here to talk about it. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So how did you first get involved with this? Like, was this something you conceived of? Because I know in talking to Kurt, like, some folks bring their own visions and some people get approached by Nuit mm-hmm. Blanche.
Yeah, well, this project, it's our third year doing it, and it actually comes out of a commission from the Centre Culturel Franco-Manitobain, the CCFM, and the Théâtre Cercle Molière, the TCM, which are both kind of the big buildings on at the 340 Provencher campus. And so as a Franco-Manitobain artist, I've been working with both of those spaces for many, many years. And they were wanting to do something now that it was possible in, if we think back to, cast our minds back to 2022, it was sort of a moment where a lot of artists and a lot of artistic spaces were looking to reach out and get back into creating together after several years of being locked down.
For sure. So then was the concept behind the initial thing, like, because people had kind of been separated or locked down, like a very immersive and kind of like in-person thing? Like, because I know some of the exhibits or like installations at Nuit Blanche are kind of like spectator and spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
And this one seems to have kind of like a much more kind of like intimate vibe.
Yeah, well, I had Carte Blanche to sort of imagine what those spaces could look like during Nuit Blanche. And then as I was sort of reflecting on what I'd like to do, it snowballed into this big, beautiful project that now involves every year upwards of 20 artists and collaborations, and not only between artists, but also with the public. And I really do believe that the initial impulse for that came from this thirst to work together again. And at least for myself as an artist and as a creator, I really needed that. I really wanted to have a space where there was permission to try new things and work together and maybe do something outside of what my practice normally looks like.
So when you're looking to do something outside of your normal practice, mm-hmm. do you like start approaching people that you know work outside of that practice first, or do you kind of try to think of what you wouldn't normally do? Like, how do you kind of start shaping that snowball as it rolls down the hill?
Yeah, well, I guess it's allowing yourself to move forward without necessarily having a preconceived notion. Of course, imagining, you know, as we were designing the spaces, as we were sort of dreaming up what this could look like, we had an idea, but then we, as a team, tried to be really nimble and leave room to adapt and see what the artists that we approached had as ideas. And that sort of created the basis for that first edition in 2022. And then from there, this sort of collaborative, multidisciplinary approach became the blueprint for the following years.
So you're building off of that initial year, but approaching new people and like expanding kind of the aperture of what this is?
Yeah, exactly. And I think each year has a different flavor to it because the cohort of artists that are involved absolutely shapes what the feel of it is. This year, we're, I'd say, diving into a sort of retro-futuristic, assertive sort of space. And last year we were in a vibe that was fairly dreamy, and each year really takes a different flavor depending on the artists that are involved.
So in terms of figuring out who was going to be involved this year, like, did you have like kind of a dream list and start working on contacting people, or how did kind of the roster come about?
Yeah, it comes out in a variety of different ways. I'd love to say we have this one tried and true method, but really and truly, every year it's a little bit different. And so, in some cases, there are artists that I have this long If I let you in on my nerdy side, I have this big spreadsheet where every time I come across an artist that I find interesting, which is honestly very often, I open it and just put some tags so that I can later come back and refresh my memory. And then from there, I see if there's pairings that can work well, because the whole idea for us is that we want the artists to get the chance to do something outside of what they are normally working on as well. And so that's one place that I start. And then I'm also really lucky to work with several amazing collaborators. So for example, Urban Shaman Contemporary Aboriginal Art curates one of the pieces at HyperArt, and then Cluster Festival as well curates a piece. So luckily for me, I'm, yes, coming up with ideas, but also getting to bounce back and forth with some amazing curators. And that's sort of how everything comes together.
So in that case, like Justin and Ashley have kind of their own carte blanche to do within the overarching thing what they want to do for those specific things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And they've really prepared some pretty exciting pieces this year.
So that spreadsheet, then, did you like go back to it and say, which tag works with this? Who do I approach?
That's right. Yeah. And then, of course, that's the dream stage. And then after that, you have to come down to reality and see, okay, logistics, what's, what can we do this year and who's available? And then from there, you kind of have that flexibility to follow that first idea and then see what's doable and what shape it takes.
Now, obviously, Cirque Molière, the theater, I know, having seen you up at Clear Lake, you said you were working on a PTAE commission. Like, how important is theater to this kind of project?
Well, this year is the first time that we actually have a theater artist in the cohort, which is really exciting. Stéphanie Morin-Robert, who's presenting who's doing a world premiere of a new piece at TCM, later in October, is doing an open studio during HyperArt. So I'm excited that we're involving a theater artist for the first time. And theater is, I've been really inspired by that medium in the last couple of years. As a musician, I've had the chance to work on some pieces with theater artists, and that I find it to be really inspiring. And even just getting to hang out in those buildings while other folks are working. And though this is our first year at HyperArt involving that art form specifically and explicitly, that the kind of ethos around that work is certainly a part of the project. We like to be theatrical.
For sure. Now, in talking to Kurt, you know, like he's got to wear a lot of hats on Nuit Blanche and maybe doesn't get to see everything. Is that kind of a similar vibe for you at the CCFM campus? Like that you kind of don't get to kind of soak in one thing. You got to kind of go around.
Definitely. Absolutely. And I mean, I love it in a sense. Getting to do that is, it's a privilege to get to be involved in so many parts and see it all come together is really a very special moment to me. It is certainly wild. I put on my runners that day because I quite literally sometimes am running.
So you're doing a lot of like cardio right now to prepare?
Yeah, that's mainly how I've been prepping.
Sure enough. The term HyperArt, like, did you come up with that for the...
So initially, I had another idea that I was working with, which honestly, now looking back, it was quite bad. But I was working with this idea of, in French, hypercampus, so like hypercampus, because I was like, okay, we have this campus, it's going to be hyperactive, and justifiably so, it wasn't sticking very well to me, and then I had a meeting with the teams. At CCFM and TCM to kind of present the project and say, yeah, I have this working title, I'm not quite sure. And then they were like, well, why don't you just call it HyperArt instead? And that just was exactly right to me.
Sometimes simplicity is the key.
Truly, yes.
Like, obviously, there's a lot of thought that goes into this night, but, like, do you leave a lot of space for something spontaneous to happen? Like it's not planned down to the last detail?
Well, whether we do plan it down to the last detail or not, there will be something spontaneous that happens. So I think it's better to be ready for it and to be open to it, even, because that's often some of the more exciting stuff is that there's and the artists are kind of in this mode too, because a lot of the pieces that get created are actually going to be in workshop next week. We have artists in residency in the days leading up to the event. So it's this big momentum, it's this big push. And so allowing for spontaneity and also the energy from that is kind of the magic that makes it happen, honestly.
Well, the only way to experience it is to go to HyperArt at Nuit Blanche. Usually I ask an artist to, you know, like, pick a track, but there's nothing from this that exists yet. It'll exist that night. But is there something that you've been listening to that has, like, kind of inspired you or motivated you during the lead up?
Yeah, I mean, I always love to listen to the artists that are programmed, and so that's been a good source of inspiration to me. And then I also have been working quite a lot on the pieces that are going to be presented in one of the exhibits. So every year I do a soundscape project with a cohort of artists. And so 3 to 4 artists join me in my studio for a flash session where we have nothing planned in advance. And the idea is that in those 4 hours, we come up with a brand new piece, a brand new soundscape, and then I work on those afterwards to kind of polish them up and get them ready for Nuit Blanche. So I've been listening to that a lot, working on it, and that it always really gets me into the space and gets me kind of imagining what the night is going to be like.
Cool. Is there something we can play for listeners?
I've got maybe a snippet I can send. Yes, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, if you can send me the MP3, I'll play a little bit of that to close out the interview.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, HyperArt at CCFM, that is just over a week away. That is the 28th. What time does it run, Rihanna?
It runs from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m., but with some exhibits that are running starting at 6. So, for example, our satellite location in the exchange in Stephen Juba Park starts at 6.
Right, because there's kind of like a natural progression, like you start at Stephen Juba Park. Is that the way I understand it?
Yeah, for folks that are coming from that direction, they can start at Stephen Juba, and then we have something in the window at Maison des Artistes in St. Boniface's City Hall, and then the campus, which if you're coming down Provence, you can't miss it.
No, you definitely can't. Rihanna, thanks very much for taking some time out of what I know is a busy schedule leading up to Nuit Blanche, and best of luck with the HyperArt event.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
just a minute. If you stay here, I could listen. I could be the one you're dreaming of. And you know I didn't mean it. You're the only one I'm seeing.
Chion with The Night, her most recent single. So far as I know, Chion will be involved with Hyper Art. A lot of the details are being kept under lock and key, but definitely encourage you to go down to CCFM on September 28th as part of Nuit Blanche. Check out all of the stuff that's happening on Nuit Blanche. A reminder, last week's guest, Sheldon Burney's Wednesday of Wild and Wonderful Words, is happening at Sukram's next Wednesday. Definitely check that out. And I know Fort Street is hosting Oktoberfest with the Damn Truth and the Bloodshots, happening at the Pyramid Cabaret in collaboration with Devil May Care. That's happening tomorrow, daytime through evening, weather permitting outside. Earlier this week, I saw Explosions in the Sky at the Burt. Fantastic show. I'm going to play you a track from The Wilderness, their 2016 record, the title track, in fact. And then also earlier this week, the Polaris Prize was announced, and I was on the grand jury this year representing Mdewanok, Jeremy Dutcher's fantastic record. Just under a year ago, he came to town, played the Burt on tour with that record. We had the chance to talk at that time, so I've edited the interview, removed the references to playing at the Burt, playing live. But we spoke at length about this record, and I really encourage people to re-listen to this interview. I firmly believe this is a very strong and important record that will stand the test of time. And Jeremy Dutcher made history as the only two-time winner of the Polaris Prize. Congratulations to Jeremy. This is a major accomplishment, a major work, and I'm really pleased to see that the rest of the Polaris jury felt the same way. The Well, the first time we had him on, it was to play at Sakahiwe Festival. He's back. Jeremy Dutcher joins us on the show. Welcome back.
Oh, it's nice to be here with you again.
So the last time we talked, we were talking about how your elder Maggie Paul had kind of steered you towards the cylinders that would become the music on Wolastoqiyik Lintawaganawa. Oh, is that right?
Yes.
There. Okay.
You nailed it, man. Yeah.
And it was to preserve the Wolastoqiyik language. And she prompted one of the songs on this new one, Mandelwinok, the Take My Hand. She basically gave you the initial lyrics. Is Maggie always the one kind of pushing?
Yeah, she's always the one. Pushing is the way to put it, too. I love our elders so much. They're very instructive in how they work with the young ones, and which is great because we all need direction. And she's always like provided me that throughout my life. You know, I've been going and singing with her since I was like 8 years old. So like she's been a constant presence and influence in my life. And like you said, she was a huge influence and part of the first record and that how that all came together with the old songs. And it was actually, I guess about 5 years ago now, I still go and visit with her, you know, and this time I went and we were kind of around her kitchen table. And usually we sing every time we get together. And she shares a song with me and says, oh, you know, go sing this. Go out there and sing this. But this time she sang me a song in English for the first time. And it was kind of like, you know, I didn't expect it at all. You know, it was a real surprise. And it was just that one verse to Take My Hand. And she said, go and sing this for the young people. They're forgetting how to love each other. So go give them this love song. So, you know, it is that direct. You know, she really gives instructions and lets me know. So as a, you know, I just try to listen and write good songs underneath, you know. And we put out a music video for that one just recently, actually, with somebody from Winnipeg, actually, Gail Pruden, who's a two-spirit jingle dress dancer, makes a really important cameo. In that video, so go check it out if you want.
Yeah, well, I'll link to it in the show description for the show notes for the episode. So writing in English, like there's, you know, Wolastoqiyik songs, like you obviously are very still much embodying the rebirth of that language, but the, as I understand it, the including English in this album is an attempt at bridging a divide between the English speakers and the indigenous population. Is that like kind of like the like mentality behind it?
That's a cool way to put that, like bridging divide. Like I think for me it was about communicatability and like the fact that, you know, with my first record, even though it was all in Wolastoqiyik and I created it very much for Wolastoqiyik people, like for the community. Mm. And yet, you know, all of these non-Indigenous people, Indigenous people from different nations, newcomers, kind of gathered around it and wanted to know and wanted to listen to what we had to say. And that for me was like, oh, well, I should talk to them then, you know, in a way, not just sonically and through music, which is a universal language and it is so easily understood by our spirit, but actually talk to their heart, like talk to their brain, talk to... And maybe you can move them or speak to them. I guess I thought about my parents too. Like my mom's Indigenous and speaks Wolastoqiyik. That's her first language. So, you know, it's, you know, when she listens to that first album, she hears it in a really different way than my dad, who's non-Indigenous. And he's like, oh yeah, I put it on in the background while I work, you know?
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, that's beautiful too. You know, I'm happy to be somebody's, background concentration music, but I also want to speak to the Stephen Dutchers of the world. You know, I want to tell our story to him and to, you know, capital C Canada, because I think I don't know, for a long time there wasn't good representation in the world when it came to Indigenous stories. Like we weren't allowed to tell our stories, you know, in that really open way, you know, and a lot of people's imagery, or you know, like when they think about Hollywood Indians, you know, it's like that has nothing to do with us, you know. You know, that those were Italians that they got to play us, you know. So it's like finding a way to tell our stories, not just, you know, really from our perspective, so through our language, but also, you know, for me it was about going that extra step and communicating with the other and telling stories really directly to them, and yet kind of trying to do both.
Right.
Because, but as you're saying, you know, for me, doing it in the language and ensuring that linguistic revitalization is always a super important piece of what I'm trying to say and do, that had to be central still. And yet, you know, you can still, you can, we can have both. We can talk inward and outward too, and have big conversations and little conversations all at once.
No, I totally get what you're saying in terms of like the people can connect with the music, even if they are not, you know, well, that's a great
speaker.
Speakers.
Yeah, totally.
I was talking about, so another guest on the show is Audrey Ochoa, the trombonist. And she was talking about how Cucuru Paloma, the Kitana Veloso song, like, I don't speak Portuguese, but it's a very emotional song, and it speaks to me just on a like resonant level.
Right.
I would say that's the same with the music that you sing in Ulazquik, that like that's,
yeah,
it connects in some way. You were talking about, you know, how things are kind of portrayed. And so very curious about kind of like the first record is you mostly by yourself or taking the voices of like historic recordings. This one, you've brought more people into the fold. Is it then like, I'm going to share my vision of Madel Wanug, the record, with these players, with, you know, Owen, with Baja, and like then how we then portray this to the larger world. Like you're more of a director of the film than like, you know, the cast member.
I mean, oh yeah, what a question. Making an album is such a trip. You bring up so many like thoughts for me around like what it all means to bring all that together and weave that together and try to tell that story and invite, you know, be really clear about the story you want to tell, but then also inviting other people in to tell their story in relation to yours as well. I think that's a really beautiful act and quite unique to making that album. So it is like, it's a really personal, there's a lot of personal stories on here. And yet it is kind of that like exploration of community. And it's not just even in the collaborators, but it's in the structure, like the music of how, like who's in the room, right? So the first one was very DIY. We didn't have a lot of money, right? So we were recording it in people's living rooms and like at the university in some classroom. And like, it was just like, it was pretty DIY.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, we had access to a little more, right? So we had that, you know, we had an orchestra. We had a choir. I built a choir of my friends. So the choir is actually, it's a very resonant and frequent element to this album. And I'm very happy about that because it also it's directing us towards what the meaning of what I'm kind of looking at in the conceptual meaning of the record, which is about collectivity and community. And so the fact that there's literal community on that record and singing together, I think, is a really important act. So the sonic world is very much expanded with this record too. So I'm excited to go and to play that now live.
Was that like a difficult transition to go from that like small, I have this by myself, partially, like you said, out of financial necessity, but like broadening things and bringing in new people, is there like letting go of some things for you?
Oh, for sure. You got to let go of that vision. Well, no, that's not what I want to say. No,
okay.
You don't want to let go of the vision. You keep the vision, but you let go of some of the holding it tight, some of the control, I think. And that's a beautiful thing because it gets transformed and it changes inevitably through that. But it's just about releasing into the fact that you can trust. If you really work with high level collaborators, you know, I was very fortunate to be surrounded, as you said, by Basha and Owen and this choir, by really high level collaborators. And when you can just relax into that kind of trust and just like, and them to catch you in a musical way, that feels so special, you know, and that doesn't always happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very fortunate with this group of collaborators that it all went together. And then when stuff happens, you know, you're going to catch each other. And that's beautiful.
Was building songs from scratch on this record a different experience than, you know, having those recordings
Man, yeah, exactly. You're asking all the perfect questions, because exactly this, you know, with the first record, because I was working with those traditional songs, with those wax cylinders, it was confined, or there was a constraint around it, which not to say that's a bad thing, but it's just like, you felt kind of like, oh, I need to keep those melodies as is, or I need to like honor what they are. With this one, because I was using different source material, I wasn't using the old songs. I was using like poems and like, you know, other forms of inspiration. The melodies were like, you could do whatever you want. You're free. You know, you can like, you can explore all different kinds of ways of putting a song together. And that felt like super exciting.
So then in terms of the like sonic landscape of this, you know, like you said, you're working with strings, you're working with a choir. Are you hearing that in your head when you're writing those songs, or is that, you know, kind
yeah.
of, so you do hear like the full picture?
I'm a very much work backwards kind of person. You know, it's like the song is almost like up there in the air already. And it's been, you know, you hear it perfectly the first time, and then, but you can't make it yet. You know what I'm saying? Like you hear it, but it's like the replicating that feels really far away. And so you come close to it, or, you know, me as a pianist, I come close to it, you know, with 10 fingers and 88 keys, as close to it as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes it's still not even enough. You're like, that's still not what I heard. And then, so you got to take it to a friend, you know, somebody who can bring the strings in, or somebody who can share the voice, you know, and have a choir around it. And then it comes a little closer again, still to the vision that you had. But that's very much how I work. And it's about kind of not replicating, but just kind of coming a little closer to that beautiful thing you heard up front. So I don't know if that's strange. I don't know if...
No, it makes it like if you have a vivid dream and then you're trying to like recap or write it down, like it's like halting attempts at kind of like getting towards what the bigger thing was.
Totally, totally. And maybe you never will, but the approaching beauty is about as best we can do.
Yeah. So speaking of beauty, I'd read an interview you did with Melody Lau, and you were talking about, you know, even when you are going to put forth some like hard messages, that you have to put forward love and beauty at the same time. And that like, that seems to be kind of the ethos of Madel Winoak, that like some hard truths, but like put forward in a beautiful way that is going to like speak to the heart before it captures the head.
You got it, man. Like, that's it. I think it all needs to be balanced. Right. And so if we're telling hard stories, like, you know, there's certain tracks that I didn't really release as singles, like The Land That Held Them As They Died, or like, well, I did release Ancestors Too Young. But songs like this, it's like, it's looking at like genocide and like hard history that we hold together, like all of us do, you know, and with what's come out in the past couple of years, we're all like, as a society, I think, like looking more honestly at our shared history. And that's really important, because then it contextualizes, you know, what's going on Portage in Maine, you know, because then we can, as a country, think about like, oh, we just need to be helping each other heal, because what happened back there, that was really, I don't know if I can swear on here, but messed up. So, but do it in beauty. And this is always a fundamental teaching that, you know, actually people like Maggie Paul have really instilled in me from a young age, which is that we must do it in beauty, and we must be humble and about what we don't know and what is a mystery to us. These kinds of teachings that have been, you know, laid out in my life, and I've been very lucky to, you know, have a relationship to language and culture. Not all of our young people do, right? So trying to give that outward, and because these teachings are really beautiful, because our ways of thinking about the world, geologically, but also the human world as well, you know, and all the creatures on this. Anyway, I digress. Indigenous ways are beautiful, and I love to share them. That's all I'm trying to say.
I'm here for the digressions as well, Jeremy. You know what? Like, this is supposed to be a conversation. If you want to go in a digressive way, that's I'll go with you there.
Listen, you did mention we could talk for hours.
Oh, though, gosh. So. Yeah, I know, right? Ancestors Too Young. You mentioned, you know, it's a hard truth one, but you released it. It's, you know, addressing the, like, suicide epidemic and, you know, the struggles of Indigenous queer people and Two-Spirit people. Obviously, that's something that's very personal to you. I'm sure because we've seen it in New Brunswick, we've seen it in Saskatchewan. It was in the election here in Manitoba. Attacks on on trans people, on the 2SLGBTQIA plus community. Like, did you feel compelled that I need to put this song out, even if it's not necessarily a single? That like this right. this is a voice that needs to be heard right now.
Well, it's like what these singles and stuff. I don't know. I make records and I write songs, you know. So it's like, you know, they're gonna put it out however they want to put it out. You try to reflect what's going on around you, you know. Reflect the what's going on in your time. So, you know, I think about, especially, the province I come from, what's going on and the kind of regressive, you know, I worked as a, before I was doing music, I actually worked as a LGBT inclusion educator. You know, I was going into schools. I was the bad guy they don't like. You know, I was going and trying to create safer spaces for our young people in schools because I knew how hard it was, you know, right. you know, and I knew what that experience was like, is not really feeling comfortable or being the only one, or, you know, not having a space or an adult that I felt I could go to. That's what that's about. You know, that's what all this debate is about, is just creating a little more safety for people, you know, so that they don't have to feel so isolated in these like small rural places. You know what? You know, the debate's not about downtown Toronto. It's probably not even about Winnipeg. You know, it's about little small towns, you know, where it's like, actually, you might be the only one. And I hope that this album, full of like queer collectivity and of healing and of magic and all of these things that we're talking about in this record, we can send that towards these little small town rainbow children, you know, and like let them know that on the other side, you know, there's a lot going on. And so I think a lot about this moment we're in right now and the fact that we're seeing regression, like, you know, backsliding, and people are losing stuff, you know, and we don't have to go too much further than down south to understand that, like, what happened with a woman's right for her body is, you know, that's like, it can all happen here.
Yeah. And the trans rights stuff that's been happening in the States is like the parental rights talk.
Totally. And
it's
we see
the
it
same
here
language.
Too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, I think we, as, you know, Canadians, or however we want to talk about ourselves up here, we can view ourselves very separate from down south. What's going on down there feels very far. But we see these movements and we see these players in our political system that are bringing forward messages that are pretty darn similar to those messages. So I think it's a time that we need to, as people from communities are we live?
No, it's taped.
Okay, just one sec.
Yeah.
Done now. Maybe it'll be. Okay. Hi.
Hi. So we can wrap up really short.
Sorry, we may have to.
Yeah.
I'm just sorry. Yeah.
So I know for a fact our broadcast range, the 1200 watts, goes into smaller communities, you know, not just past Winnipeg, into the areas that you're talking about. So I'm wondering, should we play Ancestors Too Young to close out the interview, or is there another track that you'd like us to play?
No, Ancestors Too Young feels like a nice exodus of emotion and feeling, and kind of captures a lot about what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's really beautiful strings on there. And there's really beautiful kind of contextual music, but I'm really singing like hard out there. There's some yelling, there's some screaming going on. So, and then I don't know if you play the whole track, but if you play to the end, you'll hear this trumpet solo, and it is like next level. So I'm really inspired by the resilience of our people and how strong we are, even in the face of a lot of stuff. And so that's my hope, that when people listen to this and they hear me shouting out and processing grief, that's an invitation too for them to do that as well, and crank it loud and feel the power that music has to like change us, to move us. That's what I'll offer.
Well, wonderful. We'll play the whole thing. We're not going to edit out any portion of the song. Jeremy, thank you very much for taking some time. Okay. Take care.
Yeah, you too, brother.
We'll be right back. Thank you.